Alright, the Met is hotel.
This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety. May all beings be happy, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outward and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to false views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being free from all sense desires, is not born again into this world.
So, as monks, and also before we become monks, we were novices and anagarikas. We're like homeless people. So that's literally, anagarika means homeless one. And the idea is that at the time of the Buddha, 2,500 years ago, it was a time where there was a lot more kind of spiritual sects and homeless mendicants, people just living off alms food, living in forests, at foot of trees, different, these kind of religions. And so it was actually like a part of their culture. So and in the West, this kind of, you know, we're used to the kind of the Christian monks living in monasteries, but the idea of kind of having wandering ascetics is, you know, we know of it, but it's kind of a bit new to us. But there's something that's very nice about that level of simplicity that a monk or a nun, for a monk, you know, we just have the, if we're wandering, we just have the robes that we're wearing. We just have the bowl, a razor, and we're taught not to worry about what we're going to get tomorrow. You know, are we going to get food? Are we not going to get food? Are we going to get enough sleep, or is it going to be raining all night? Or depends on the time of the year. You never know these things. But the idea is, if we take care of our minds, and then there's actually a teaching about the different types of laziness. It's like, if it's too early and you get up, practice. If it's too late, practice. If it's too hot, practice. If it's too cold, practice. If you've eaten too much, practice. If you haven't eaten enough, practice. Because the mind's always going to tell you, oh no, it's too hot, I can't practice. Oh no, it's too late, I can't practice. It's too cold, it's too early, I can't practice. So the mind always has this kind of laziness, these excuses that stop us from living at our best and making use of our opportunities. And so when the Buddha was encouraging the monks to practice, he said, you know, like your hair or your clothes were on fire, what would you do? You think you'd sit there and, you know, have a cup of tea, go for a stroll? No, you'd put the fire out. You'd use all your effort, all your energy, everything you got, you'd put that fire out right there. And so that's like how the Buddha taught us to think about spiritual practice. And the word is like samvega. And samvega is like spiritual urgency. That, you know, we think about death, we think about sickness, we think about these things. And because when we think about them, then it brings up the sense of urgency that we don't know when we're going to die. We don't know when our family members are going to die. We don't know when our house is going to burn down. We don't know many things. But what we do know is we're alive right now, and we have the ability to practice. And the Buddha said there's different ways of practice. There's the slow and painful way. There's the fast and painful way. There's the slow and happy way. And there's the fast and happy way. And he said, you know, basically, we're welcome to practice any way we want, but the only way that he recommends is the fast and the happy way. So that means whenever we're practicing or we've got difficulties in our lives and things are going the wrong way, it's because of our attitude. It's because we haven't yet understood how to properly practice. Because, you know, when we react to things in a bad way, then we think that there's something wrong with our experience. You know? And so it's all really stemming from this liking and disliking, believing the stories of our minds. And so if we constantly believe negative stories in our minds and we're always pointing the finger outside of ourselves, you know, when are we going to point the finger back towards ourselves? When are we going to look in the mirror and say, who is that mind thinking that thought? Who is it that sets these boundaries and makes these rules? You know, it's just our own old habits, our own tendencies, the things that we haven't yet investigated. But to get that investigation, then it requires regular effort. It's not like a part-time job, it's a full-time job. So we can't just practice for 5 minutes and then never, you know, hope that when we practice again for 5 minutes a week later that everything will continue from there. But rather we have to like see the practice as, like I was telling a friend the other night, that, you know, say you have your meditation every day, you've got a 20-minute meditation that you do, or however much you do, rather than just have that meditation, have like a 4-hour period. And in that 4-hour period, you're going to prepare your mind. So you're going to say, okay, for every hour, for 4 hours before that meditation, I'm going to make sure that I'm mindful. I'm going to make sure I have good thoughts. I'm going to make sure that, you know, I prepare my mind for the meditation. So then rather than just sitting down and dealing with the backwash of the day, you have that period where it becomes more like a sacred space, a space of, you know, quietness and peace, that even though you may have things to do, that you're just going to watch your mind. And then that's like preparing the soil for the meditation. And I've learned over time that when we have this kind of attitude of developing mindfulness, then it makes our practice much easier. If we're just hoping that we can let the mind run amok, and then, you know, sit down and get a little bit of peace every time we meditate, it'll work, but it's a very slow path. It's not making use of our resources. It's like if we have to memorize something or learning a piece of music or something, you have to have that regular practice, you know, and you have to have that inclination towards wanting to learn. So if we don't want to do the meditation, if we don't want to do the practice, then we're just kind of doing it to get a little bit of peace. We don't have the full kind of attitude yet. And then the other difficulty is when we attach to results. You know, it happens to a lot of people when you start meditating and you get a really peaceful meditation and you get some joy coming up, and you're like, okay, now it's going to be like that every time I meditate. And then you cause yourself suffering. So it's like, what we learn to do instead is to be a person who's just willing to put the causes in. You know, what are the causes for practice? What are the causes for self-discipline, for humility, for respect, for kindness, for gentleness, for patience? And then when we build those causes, when we come to meditate, you know, it's much easier. We already have a sense of ease there because we've been watching over our minds. Now, we haven't been allowing that inner critic or that inner complaining to take over our mental states. And then that's kind of the basis for present moment awareness, for presence of mind. Because to be truly present requires like a fullness of attention. And that attention, there needs to be a level of interest there. And if there's not, it's a very slow process. It's like learning piano, but you hate it. how quickly you're going to learn piano? Every time you're there, you hate your teacher, you hate the piano, and you hate the music pages. That's like somebody who doesn't have any interest, you know. They don't have a good attitude. So what we want to do is foster our life in a... It's not that we have to meditate all the time. I was trying to explain to my friend, it's not that I'm saying meditate 4 hours in a row. But for that 4 hours, even if it was just, okay, once an hour, I'm going to remind myself a little mantra leading up to that meditation. You know, be more present, be more kind, be more patient, or whatever it is. Now, whatever is the kind of antidote for our particular inner difficulties, you know, because we're all different. So you look, what is the main problems that our mind has? Come up with a little mantra, and then the job is just, you know, once an hour for the 4 hours before your meditation, all you're going to do is remember to say your mantra. And just that level of mindfulness, that's enough, you know. It's actually quite a lot of mindfulness just to do that. It doesn't sound like much, but it requires presence, and then we're putting in a good program into our brain. It's like if we watch news for 24 hours straight, how's our mind going to be after that? Is it going to be good? Is it going to be healthy? And it's the same with our thoughts. If we just let our thoughts do whatever it wants all day, isn't that exhausting? Is that a good program? Is that a good station to be tuning into? And so to get the program onto a good channel, we need to learn to harness the forces of our mind. And to harness those forces is like a great irrigator. First, you need to learn the skills. You know, you can't just think you can have a wonderful crop in a field if you don't know how to irrigate water. Because the moment the water comes, you're not going to be able to get it where it needs to go. And so this is like us. If we just do our meditation, but we don't properly appropriate our lives in a way which is going to lead to good meditation, then, we do the meditation, but it might take us 20 years to get really good mental states. But if we can prepare the soil, learn about irrigation, you know, from people who really know and who do it, then, you know, we can try and apply those skills in our own lives. And then the more we learn these things for ourselves, we find how it works, then we can just apply that method. It's just like a cause and effect. But if we just hope that, you know, watching news for 24 hours a day on a channel of random thoughts is going to lead us to somehow being the best version of ourselves, then you know, we might be waiting a long time. That might be the painful and slow path. And so there's no judgment. It's not like, oh, we have to do this or we have to do that. You know, practice is just a personal thing, and so we can't judge another. And the qualities that we wish to foster in our own heart, I mean, that's up to us. You know, what we want to do, what we choose to do, our level of practice, the things that we want to grow, it's just our personal experience. So nobody can do it for us, and nobody can make those decisions for us. But if we never make those decisions, at least we should try and associate with people who are making good decisions. Because that friendship and that association will mean that, you know, we start to see that, oh, this is a good thing. You know, and then kind of by osmosis, we go in the right direction. And then also take sacrifice, you know. We have to also be honest with our lives and see what are the things that are poisoning our experience. You know, my last house, I think I never even had a TV antenna installed because I realized, you know, TV was just such a time waster. I did get, you know, I still did watch things, but I would just get DVDs or whatever. You know, I would watch things that were actually meaningful to me. But I saw that idea of just sitting down in front of the television, the problem is that you might not get up. And also I had studied film, and so I saw the power of the influence of the mind, and I started to realize that if we want things to go well in our lives, then we need to be careful of the things that we put into our minds. So if we want to move in good direction, then we need to listen to and read about and focus on people who are also trying to do good things with their lives. Now, if we just watch, I think one of my friends, I was trying to explain to her 10 years ago that maybe watching Chainsaw Massacre films wasn't the greatest thing to do with her life. That maybe it might have had something to do with her anxiety complexes. And you know, for some people it's going to be a very slow process because they don't see that actually, you know, the things that we put into our mind, they have an effect. And then this idea of renunciation, it's also very close to generosity. I mean, look at a person who's generous, you know, they give to a homeless person when they see one, or they help sick people, or they go out of their way to be kind and do things without any expectation of anything in return. You know, they're actually renouncing. They're renouncing their own needs and desires to help those around them. Very high level of renunciation. And that generosity, that it's really also close to thankfulness and gratefulness. And one very simple teaching in Buddhism is that a true person is thankful and grateful. So if we ever want to evolve our lives, it's no matter what religion or what walk of life we are, just ask ourselves, you know, how can we be more thankful? How can we be more grateful? What are the blessings in our lives? What are the good things in our lives? You know? But we can always complain. Now, that's the easy path. And a lot of us, because we were brought up, you know, it's hard to be a parent, so a lot of us brought up at the feet of our parents complaining about things. They're not ready to be parents. They're not ready for the challenges that life has thrown upon them. And so we kind of grow up with this gossiping and complaining as a part of life. And to go against that is very difficult, you know. So somebody who you're complaining about, or maybe some politician or somebody in your life, you know, just think that they're a real person. You know, they have their own challenges, their own weaknesses. They have to look in the mirror every day. And they may just be a sum of a whole bunch of bad events that led to them, you know, living a very poor life. So we should have compassion for them, kindness for them, respect for them. You know, it doesn't matter what people do to us. We have the opportunity to give up that irritation, to give up those thoughts of ill will, and just be kind to them. And maybe they haven't had much kindness in their life and they don't know what kindness is. And it's this is a, like a deeper level of generosity, and that's the idea of metta, where we have this universal benevolence. Just like a mother loves her only child, and instead of just loving the only child, we have this, you know, boundless kindness to all beings, regardless of their actions, because we can't act for other people, just like other people can't act for us. But when we choose to have respect for other people and see the best in other people, then 9 times out of 10, you know, that will resolve the issue. Because instead of us complaining in our minds about how terrible this person is, we can remember, oh, actually, you know, there was that action where they were kind that day. Or there was that action where they said something nice, or they did something nice. Most people, actually, they're not all bad. Very few people have 3 unwholesome roots in their mind. And if they do, then they're destined on a very difficult path, so we should have even more compassion for them. They literally have a hell-like mind if they're doing that. And so they're just building up causes of suffering for themselves. But if we can grow these inequalities in ourselves through our meditation, through watching our mental states, through associating with that which is good, and this is all kind of close to quietness, you know, because that quietness is where we can be at peace with ourselves, where we can have contentment and fewness of desires, where the mind can unify and doesn't have to go out into the world, into busyness. And this is the kind of the fruits of the practice. Because when we start to have a peaceful mind, then we can develop wisdom. And part of that wisdom is learning to evolve as a being, to see, willingly look at what our own faults are. You know, we have actions of body, where we move the body, actions of speech, when we move the tongue, and actions of thought, all the things that pass through our mind. And they're all within our domain as a human being to look into, to see whether these, just like that, watching the TV station, you know, is that a wholesome thing? Having the news on 24/7, you know, how wholesome is it, the stations that we're tuning into in our actions? So it's not that we need to be perfect in a day or that we need to be some particular way. But the truth is that we have the keys to the causes of our lives. And if we put in the right causes, then inevitably the results will come. Mm-hmm. So we can look out into the world and we can say this is terrible and that is terrible. But what we can do is make changes right now to our actions. And that will change the world around us. Because when we choose to be good people and respect those around us, that has an effect. And I said the story a few weeks ago of Saka, so the ruler of the god Saka, ruler of the devas, in his previous life as a human, because in Buddhism, your lives, your actions as a human, if you do lots of good actions, then that can lead to heaven. If you do lots of bad actions, that can lead to hell. If you do kind of in-between actions, then you know, be reborn as a human. If you kill, you may be reborn as an animal. And so all these things are up and down, but we're focused on kind of spiritual purity and enlightenment, like going beyond suffering as an ultimate goal. But Saka was somebody who he was just a good person. You know, he had these 9 or 10 things, these ideas that he would stand by. And they were like the basic 5 precepts, which we have in Buddhism, which he just naturally had in his mind. But also things like respect to his mother and father. You know? And this... just ideas of integrity. Like if we ask ourselves, what are like the highest truths of goodness in this world, that govern this world? You know? And, you know, being kind to our mother and father regardless of what they've done to us. You know? This level of respect. That's a very, very high ideal. And then also respecting the elders in our community. You know? Kind of have our society upside down at the moment where but actually, you know, we should, you know, in business and in personal life, we should be learning from our elders and respecting our elders and seeing the truth that they have and learning from that, because that there's great wisdom there. These people who they've already lived, they've already given a lot, and now they have wisdom in their hearts from their experience. And so if we just pass them by, then how are we going to become wise? How are we going to grow as a society and as a person? And so wisdom and respect for our elders and care for our parents. And then these 5 precepts. And then I did mention the story, but I'll just briefly say again, even when somebody came and struck him across the face, knocked him to the ground, he didn't even have a bad thought towards them. He just got up and went and stood somewhere else. And somebody else came along and struck him against the face. And then again, he got up, and instead of thinking a bad thought, he decided to go and do something good. And actually, those actions that he chose to do led to 33 other men choosing to do good actions as well. And so this idea that, you know, we don't have any power as a being, and that, you know, our thoughts and our speech and these things don't really matter, well, that's the slow and painful path. And but it doesn't mean that we have to do everything in a day, but just notice every now and then, you know, what stations are we tuning into, you know? Can we just slowly try and gather towards the things that we think are good in life? Because when we start to see the truthfulness, honesty, kindness, patience, endurance, gentleness, they're all kind of, you know, profound qualities. And so bit by bit, if we tune into that and we see that that's good, then naturally we'll gather towards it. But if we just let our life kind of run by without ever reflecting, then we won't gather towards what is good. So that's a little Dhamma talk. And we do a meditation. You just start by getting yourself into a comfortable position. And stretch the body a little bit if you have any aches and pains. Open the body up. Sense of uprightness and relaxation. Maybe just start by taking a few deep breaths. Letting go of tensions and just coming into the present. Meditation is a time to slow down. Time to put down the world. Put down sights, sounds, smells, tastes, touch and thoughts. or down liking and disliking, reactions. Just come into the present, experiencing things as they actually are. Even our thoughts are just stories. During meditation, we freely relinquish all of these things. Even joyfully relinquish. We see ourselves caught up in thoughts. When we notice, we can just smile and let go. Nowhere to go. No one to be. Nothing to do. So time to just let things settle and vanish. And what's our experience right now? What's the sensations in the body? What's the movements of our mind? What emotions are arising and passing away? Just bring this total awareness to what is present. This is right, that is wrong, this is good, that is bad. Just let go of all of that. Relaxing the mind, the experience, relaxing the body. Relax the soles of the feet, tops of the feet. Relaxing the ankles and the lower legs. Moving up the calves and the shins. Relaxing the knees. It's just putting the mind into the body is very grounding. Helps us come into the present. Relaxing the lower thighs, the middle of the thighs, and the upper thighs. The hips, the waist, the weight of the body onto the seat or the cushion of the floor. And just become aware of the belly as it rises and falls. Rising with an in-breath, falling with an out-breath. We don't cling to the in-breath. We don't cling to the out-breath. It's this natural rise and fall. This gentle awareness. Accepting whatever is without judgment. Grounding, waking up, relaxing, rising with the in-breath, belly falling with the out-breath, relinquishing any lingering stories, concerns, agitations, giving our full attention. Turning up the mindfulness and interest, the relaxation and peace. So belly rises with the in-breath, falls with the out-breath. is welcoming the experience of settling into the present. A kind heart. There's no rush. Belly rises with the in-breath, falls with the out-breath. Relax the lower spine and lower back and sides, moving up to the middle of the spine, middle of the back and sides, and the upper spine, shoulder blades, all the muscles of the upper back, unwinding, loosening, relaxing. The tops of the shoulders, drooping, relaxing. The upper arm, elbows, the lower arms, wrists, back and palms of the hand. Fingers and fingertips. It's awareness and relaxation. And from the belly, relax the solar plexus, the diaphragm. Just imagine a white light, luminous light, spreading through the region of the solar plexus, waking up a little as the mind unifies in peace, moving up into the upper chest, the heart, relaxing the heart deeply, sense of ease in the heart. And the lungs. Aware as the lungs fill up with the in-breath and empty with the out-breath. Just allowing the breath to be energized and relaxed, open and free. So the lungs fill up and empty. Energized and relaxed, open and free. Welcoming whatever is. No judgment. Energized and relaxed, open and free. See if we can have a bit of fullness of the in-breath and out-breath. Relax the neck, all the muscles of the neck, the back of the neck, inside the neck, even the pipes and the air passing through the neck, the front of the neck, the throat, the chin, the jaw, the jaw bones, the gums and teeth, the tongue down to the root, the lips. You might notice a slight smile, subtle smile, in the corners of the mouth. Just a smile of relaxation, of contentment, of fewness of desires. Relax the nostrils, the ridge of the nose, sides of the nose, the upper cheeks and cheekbones. The ears, the back of the head, the top of the head, the forehead, the eyebrows, the temples, around the eyes, just relaxing, letting go of any tiredness, any heaviness, just becoming buoyant and light. Relax the eyelids and the eyes themselves. As we relax the eyes, the physical eyes, we also relax our spiritual eyes, the eyes of the mind. Just bringing this kindness and relaxation to our inner vision and our physical eyes. Now as the body is relaxed, sense of inner alertness and of suffused peace spreading through the whole body. Let the body look after itself with the rest of the meditation. Just quietly, it can take care of itself. We give up the body, give up the physical world, and send our attention towards the mind, the heart, the spiritual experience. And how are things right now? Is there peace and kindness? How gentle or harsh are we? We just try and bring a sense of welcoming. Like our minds are a long lost friend. We haven't seen them in a long time. And we have a smile when we see them. Doesn't matter how they are, we accept them open-hearted. It's just like our minds. We're welcome. Doesn't matter what's going on, we just have this welcoming attitude. Total acceptance. Total friendliness. This inner world, our home, our place of practice, like a sacred temple, bringing quietness and friendliness. Now is the time to bring up our meditation object or theme if we have one. Otherwise, I'll give a guided meditation on the breath. Some people watch at the nostril, some at the lip, some at the roof of the mouth, the heart, or the belly. But some like to follow the flow or the feeling of the breath. We just choose a means that is most natural to us and stick with it for the meditation. Become aware of the feelings of the in-breath. Become aware of the feelings of the out-breath. chosen means or place of contact. Accepting the in-breath as it is. Accepting the out-breath as it is. Just this simple awareness is good enough. Content just with this much. Total awareness of the in-breath, total awareness of the out-breath, total awareness of in-breathing, total awareness of out-breathing. Friendliness with the in-breath, friendliness with the out-breath, with total commitment to a heart of friendship, friendliness with the in-breath, friendliness with the out-breath. Sense of luminous ease, awakening peace, total friendliness with the in-breath, total friendliness with the out-breath. Whatever conditions may arise, you just stay with this friendliness. Just like we would with our long lost friend. Compassion and kindness. Have this total friendliness with the in-breath. Total friendliness with the out-breath. Really listening. see if we can enjoy the in-breath, enjoy the out-breath. This serene, peaceful heart, enjoying the in-breath, enjoying the out-breath. Profound peace, profound serenity, enjoying the in-breath, enjoying the out-breath. A bird snug in a nest, enjoying the in-breath, enjoying the out-breath. generous and a thankful heart, enjoying the in-breath, enjoying the out-breath. Fully giving ourselves to this inner light, this luminous ease. Unshakable peace or unshakable stillness, whatever seems to suit us best. I'll use unshakable peace. Tuning in to unshakable peace, breathing in. Tuning in to unshakable peace, breathing out. At the top of a Himalayan mountain, unmoved by anything. As we come towards the end of the meditation, just see the power and effect of taking some time to be quiet, to be with the breath or our chosen means of meditation. Is this something beneficial? Is this something worthwhile? Is this useful? We need to encourage ourselves to take the time to practice, to focus on the things that are important. We share this kindness and this peace with those in this room, those here in Perth, Australia, the world, the universe, animal and the ghost realms, the lower realms, the formless realms, the Brahma realms, the Deva realms, all the humans, from the one with the least wisdom to the one with the highest wisdom, all beings, including ourselves, share this friendliness and peace. Now let us chant the verses of sharing and aspiration.
Through the goodness that arises from my practice, may my spiritual teachers and guides of great virtue, my mother, my father, and my relatives, the sun and the moon, and all virtuous leaders of the world, may the highest gods and evil forces, celestial beings, guardian spirits of the earth, and the Lord of death, may those who are friendly, indifferent, or hostile, may all beings receive the blessings of my life. May they soon attain the threefold bliss and realize purpose. Through the goodness that arises from my practice and through this act of sharing, may all desires and attachments quickly cease, and all harmful states of mind, until I realize Nirvana in every kind of birth. May I have an upright mind, with mindfulness and wisdom, austerity and vigor. May the forces of delusion not take hold, nor weaken my resolve. The Buddha is my excellent refuge, unsurpassed is the protection of the Dharma. The solitary Buddha is my noble Lord. The Sangha is my supreme support. Through the supreme power of all these, may darkness and delusion be dispelled.
Arakantu sabba devata sabba buddha nubhavena sada soti bhavantu te avatu sabba mangalam rakantu sabba devata sabba dhamma nubhavena sada soti bhavantu te avatu sabba mangalam rakkhantu sabba devata sabba sangha nubhavena sada soti bhavantu te.
Just say briefly, so the monks will return on the 11th of October. We're in the rains retreat at the moment. So if you look on the website, the cbswa.org, they may have a meditation in the building. It's with a lay teacher or something, we're not sure. But there also is an hour meditation here, so we can speak with Tolga or somebody about that if you want to come for an hour meditation, non-guided. we have a sit here as well. But the rains retreat typically is a time for monks to focus on their practice. And so there's also the lunch here every day. People are welcome to come and offer. And it's the time for people to try and become self-sufficient with their practice as well. So, a good challenge is to try and, if you don't have a practice, to try and get one. Okay, all the best.
I'd just like to say something.
Yeah.
before, the sense of the room I got was that people would like it if there was some kind of continuing thing, and I realized I was willing to help organize that, and I have to talk to Venerable Subhukamo and Tala and see what I can do, but I can say that I'm willing to be here next Monday.
Sure, sure.
Do what I can.
Yeah, we'll post it on the website. So that's cbswa.org.
Right. I think we can.
So,
I think there might be enough lay people to have a little group.
Yeah. So it's a nice way. Because the good thing about groups like this, I mean, I used to go to the Amaral group when I was a layperson and go to Dhammaloka, is a nice way to help you tick your practice along. Because you come together, a group of like-minded people. When you just practice on your own, sometimes you can lose enthusiasm and focus. So I think it's a good idea.
Anyway, I realized I was willing to help it along if that's of any use. So it's subject to...
I will try to find someone to teach by next Monday. I don't know who will be.
Yes,
I'm just going to find someone.
Yeah. So the difference would be.
I'm just saying that if you can't, I'm willing to organize something.
Yes, that's good. Thank
you
very much.
I'm not going to put myself forward as a teacher, but I can help organize something.
And the difference would be it'll be in the house, not out
here. In the front room, in the dining room, in the front.
Okay. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. Keep an eye on the website.